Hold on, wait. Did I play the right notes? Oh, that was good. Okay. Hello, listeners.
Hey.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games, board game design, gaming, game design, what have you. And it's another regularly scheduled weekly episode where we'll talk about one game, we'll talk about the strategies involved in the game, and then we'll get in depth on its design. So Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
Well, first I want to mention that we are starting to record these podcasts online, as in like over the internet.
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned this at the beginning of our Good Stuffs episode.
Right. But so the Good Stuffs episode of this month is recorded in Discord. This episode, which is coming out on the same day, is recorded with Skype.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like to know really quickly, like we'd like to make sure you know that we'd like to know that we want to know which one sounds better.
Yes, we'd like to know if you want to tell us what you know about we'd like to know knowing which one knows better. We want to know which one sounds better, and hopefully it's one of the two.
Of the two options we gave,
hopefully they also both sound good.
So
just let us know your thoughts, and without any further ado, here is our episode for this week. So Matthew, right. What's the game
we are talking about? Smash Up, a game designed by Paul Peterson and published by AEG in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nominated for Best Card Game Awards at Golden Geek and Origins of 2013. And it won the UK Game Expo's Card Game Award of 2013.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
So to describe a little bit about what the game is about, in Smash Up, players take two armies of different fictional forces, selecting from zombies, aliens, robots, ninjas, wizards, dinosaurs, pirates, and tricksters, and smashes them together to make one blended deck of minions and action cards. Using these decks, players battle for influence in various bases from each army's fictional world. When the combined power of all minions on a base equal or surpass a base's breaking point, the players with the first, second, and third highest combined minion strikes on that base will score points, and the first to 15 points wins. That's the simplified version of how to play Smash Up. Or not really how to play it, but what the game is about. So yeah. Now let's get into how to play it and the strategies involved. So in Smash Up, how you actually play the game is you have the two decks and you put them together and you draw a hand of five cards. And on your turn, you can play one minion card and one action card, up to one minion and one action. You don't have to play both, and you don't have to play either also. So you play cards. If you play a minion, you put it on one of three or one of a number of bases face up in the middle of the table. If you play an action, then you perform whatever the action says. And then, at the end of a turn, if the minions on a base are strong enough to defeat the base's breakpoint, the base is scored, it's taken off the table, and the people with minions on the base score points. That's a little bit deeper into the specifics of how the game is played. But that's basically it. It's a pretty simple game.
Yeah, that's a big good part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's all you have to do. You mentioned that at the end of your turn, you draw two cards, right?
Oh, I forgot that. Yes, you can play up to two cards, and then yes, at the end of your turn, you then draw two cards.
Right.
Always. Even if you didn't play any cards, you draw two cards. And right. You can have a maximum of 10 cards in your hand at the end of your turn. So you would discard if you have too many. Up to 10 cards is the highest number of cards you can have in your hand. That's how you play Smash Up. So how do you win in Smash Up?
Right. So the first thing to note is that each base has a different breaking point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's usually between like 15 to 25.
Yeah, 15's very rare.
The lowest
average
one
you're looking at is like, oh, okay. Yeah, the average is around like 19 or 20.
Yeah. And so you want to figure out how to get about 5 power on a base every turn.
Okay.
5 power or like 6.
I mean,
because
I'd say the power, certainly you want to be adding power to a base every turn because the player with the most power on the base will get more points. But really, it's maybe an even better rule of thumb just to say you want to have more power on the base than your opponent does at the end of your turn. Or,
yeah, sure.
Or more power, more than an X amount of power, where X is a number of power that your opponent might have difficulty surmounting on their turn.
Yeah, most minions in the game will either give 2 or 3 power. That's mm-hmm. like the average filler minions in the deck. So say maybe you want to have 3 more power than your opponent at the end of your turn.
Because either they'll have to match your tempo, meaning you'll be ahead of them because you'll have that one turn advantage, or they won't be able to match it, and you can further extend your lead on the number of power on a base.
On the other hand, if your opponent has a lot of power on a single base and it's pretty close, you only need to put one minion there.
Yeah, because usually, I think on average, if you have the most power on a base, you'll usually score around 4 points. And then if you have the second most power on a base, you'll score around 2 points. This is, we're kind of talking about this in terms of a two-player game.
Right.
Technically, this can scale up to multiple players. And in that case, there's sometimes a third player will also win points from a base, maybe like 1 point. So if we say you want to have at least one minion there, so you at least get some points, you want to technically have the second highest power. In a two-player game, that means just having one minion there.
Well, even if you're the third highest, the point is that if you have no minions there, it's 0 points no matter what.
Right.
If you have the third highest, it's still more than 0 points.
Mm-hmm.
And that does make a difference.
So, and that's important to note. You only need a very minimal number of power on a base to win the points. You just have to be second or third, depending on the number of players. Meaning that if you already have some power there, then you should probably spend some of your time distributing power to other bases, because there will always be at least 3 bases face up on the field to place your minions onto. So if one person is spending a lot of their resources, like we said in the first tip, to maintain a 3 power advantage over all the other players so that it's hard for them to surmount your power, you know, that'll take a number of their resources to do that. You can spend your resources instead just going to other bases and starting to get an advantage there.
Right. Basically, it's an investment game.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that you're getting more than 0 points, but if it takes too many cards, like more than 2 cards, to beat your opponent at a base, then you don't need to worry about that base if you already have one thing there and move on to a different one.
Mm-hmm. It is important to get those extra points, especially because, like we said, usually you'll get around 4 points for being first, 2 points for being second, 1 point for being third, and then 0 points if you didn't get any points from that, either by being fourth or having no minions there. Being 2 points behind somebody just means that you have to beat them on another base and then it's tied, because then you'll have the 4 points and they'll have the 2 points. So you've made up the deficit and you're now even. If you fail to get any minions on a base, making up a 4 point deficit is very difficult, because that essentially just means you have to score a base entirely alone, which is impossible unless you get very lucky with a certain combination of cards in your deck.
And bases.
It doesn't happen often. Yeah, and you get lucky with a base.
Some bases are really useful.
Yeah. Or like you have a base that will give your minions extra power as long as they're on that base, or you'll just find a base that has very low scoring breakpoint, and so you can reach it faster before your opponents have a chance to act on it.
Right.
But it's unlikely, so you just always want to be trying to match people. We talk a lot about following your opponents around in games, and this is certainly one of those games where you very much have to follow them around and match what they're doing, and whenever you can, gain those small advantages in the same spaces that they're playing. Trying to sneak a play in this game is unlikely.
Right.
So we talked about in the intro how there's these different factions in the game. To go over them again, there are zombies, aliens, robots, ninjas, wizards, dinosaurs, pirates, and tricksters. Tricksters are just sort of a mix of both gnomes and imps. So,
like, like leprechauns are there.
They're kind of fae creatures, I guess.
Think of it like grim fairy tale versions of these types of creatures.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, yeah, there's kind of fae, you know, spirit sprites, magical creatures, and they all kind of just play tricks. So we can go through really quick what each strategy is, because what each theme is to each faction, because, you know, sitting down for this game, I think one of the better plays of playing it, one of the better ways of playing it, is to select your factions randomly, just so that at least you don't have, at least for the first game, so, because you probably don't have a very good understanding of how the decks work, and neither do your opponents. And if one of your opponents does have an idea, it's better just to take away that, because knowing how the factions work can actually put a very big advantage into someone's favor.
Right, yeah.
So,
okay, so
at least let's say for the in the effort of a fair game, you would play randomly. But if you want to win, here's what the decks do.
So I have these in a tier list with two factions to each tier.
Okay.
And I'm going to start with the best and go to the worst.
I think you and I have the same best tier.
Yeah, which is robots and wizards.
Yes. So let's talk about what their strategies are and why they're the best.
Right. Robots are all about playing a ton of robots that all have a pretty small power. Mm-hmm. But because you're playing a lot of them, and some of them get better with the more robots you have, they eventually assemble an army.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this by having a bunch of minions that allow you to play another minion. Either if, like, it's the first minion you played this turn, you may play another, or you may play another with two or less power.
Or look at the top card of your deck. If it's a minion, play it.
Right. And then they have a action card that draws a card for each minion you have on a base.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just...
So they dump a lot of minions, and then they draw a lot of cards, and then they dump more minions.
Yeah.
Plus, some of their minions are very resilient minions. For some reason, they decided that the faction with the best ability to play a lot of minions should also have the most valuable minions for some reason.
Yeah.
So it's hard to make up for the advantage that they
get. Robots don't have any removal.
They don't. That's right. But they do have, I mean, that and also granted, a lot of the removal in the game that removes minions is determined by power level, and minions with a lower power level, like 1 and 2, are more vulnerable than minions with power levels of 3 or higher. 3 is kind of like the breaking point. Anything higher than 3 power is likely going to be unaffected by most removal cards in the game. And robots have the highest density of low power minions.
Right.
Which I guess that's kind of why they have multiple copies of a minion that is invulnerable to removal. You know, that said, removal isn't as common as the robot's ability to play minions and reload their hand, especially mass removal that will send their minions to the discard pile. So the robots are stationed amongst the other decks with the ability to get ahead without really getting punished for it.
Right.
I think really the only deck that could punish robots is pirates, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Okay, so second, the other powerful one is wizards.
Right. And wizards are kind of the opposite side. They have
the best... Or maybe the same side, but for the other type of card.
Right. They have the best action cards in multiple action plays.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a minion that says you may play an extra action this turn. They have one that lets you play an extra action every turn.
There's an action that lets you play extra actions.
Yeah.
There's a minion that lets you look at the top card, and if it's an action, play it, just like the robots. Yeah. And the actions that they have usually draw a lot of cards or get you a lot of card advantage.
Or there's an action with a couple copies in the deck that's just play an extra minion.
Yeah. Yeah, so they have very powerful actions, and they can play a lot of them, and they can draw a lot of cards that let them play more of their actions. So both of these decks focus on tempo and getting ahead, because they just that's what they do. They play extra cards, they either extra minions or extra actions, And yeah, like in a game where you only take two actions per turn, you only play two cards per turn, a minion and an action, you know, it's kind of like any other game where you can only do two things. The soonest moment that you can do a third thing, like that's, you get a huge advantage from that.
That's how you win,
It's crazy. We talk about, in every game, we talk about how extra turns means getting ahead, and taking a full extra turn is a very advantageous thing, and these decks do it consistently. They're taking like a half turn or a full extra turn every turn. So you can see how that would get ahead. So those are the two strongest factions. So if now, do they go well together? I think yes.
But with a caveat.
Okay, what's your caveat?
That so the thing about robots and wizards is they're not as good if you only have one of their, like when you have both of them shuffled together. I think they're best when you have each in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is only because of the wizard card that is reveal the top card of your deck. If it's an action, you may play it, because that has two power, which synergizes with a lot of the robots.
Mm.
Though the other thing is that robots don't have almost any action, so there's a lot fewer actions in the deck for wizards to use.
Yeah, I'd say there is that, like, yeah, they do, one of them synergizes well with minions, one of them synergizes well with actions. Maybe I would say that they're not so good together just because they don't really have that the high end, maybe. They don't really have that kind of big payoff that can kind of increase your chances for a single turn, if you know what I'm saying.
I think the like, thing about...
You can get a lot of advantage, play a lot of extra cards, but your extra cards have to be, like, doing something. Right. And if you're just playing wizards and robots, with robots there's a limit to how many minions you can play. And with wizards, you can only draw so many actions. Wizards are better paired with another faction that has more impactful actions, I would say, because a lot of wizard actions is just about playing extra stuff. So if you can pair wizards with a deck like ninjas or something that can remove a lot of creatures with their actions, then you can turn those extra actions into even further, you know, board state or battle plan or something.
I do think the best thing about having robots and wizards together is nobody else has either of them.
That's true. No one can ever match your tempo because you have the highest tempo in the game possible.
Yeah.
So yeah.
All right. So
next tier.
I would put in the next tier aliens and tricksters.
Okay. See, tricksters, I'm unsure about just because I haven't had a chance to play with them, but I'm sure you have. So let me hear why aliens and tricksters are so good.
So aliens are all about returning minions to their owner's hands.
Mm-hmm. And lots of minions.
Like,
lots of minions have effects that happen when they interplay.
Right.
Like we mentioned the robot and wizard cards that have very powerful interplay effects. And so you can imagine any deck that can return them to your hand so that they can interplay once more is just going to push their strategies forward. Right. It's just going to slot in very nicely.
Aliens also have a minion that is 3 power, and when you play it, you gain 1 victory point.
Oh, yeah. This was, I think, what single-handedly won you the game that we played where you had the aliens. Even though you were playing with wizards, and you did have some nutty draws with the wizards, this alien card sealed it.
Because if you think about what we said earlier, with if you get first and your opponent gets second, and then you get second and your opponent gets first, and you're at the same amount of points,
mm-hmm.
if you played one of those aliens, then that's a difference of 1 point where you're in the lead.
Yeah, it breaks parity just like that. In just a card, it breaks parity. None of the other cards do that. Directly, you have to play them and around getting a very crazy swing on a base in order to break that kind of parity. So that's crazy. And then coupled with all of the effects in the alien deck that lets it return it to your hand, these serve 2 purposes. One, obviously, you get to play it again, further advance your advantage and make it so that equality and points can never be reached. Like, I mean, because like we said, you get four for first place, second for second place on average. So if you can get 2 points out of that card, then you're already like a full second place ahead of the person. If you can get 3 points, then even if they get second place, that won't be enough to make up for the disparity, right?
Right. Yeah.
But not only that, cards in your hand are, it's the safest place for a card to be other than in your deck. But having access to a card, the safest place for it to be is in your hand, because there's only one faction that can make you discard cards. And even then you get to choose which cards you discard. So if it's in your hand, nothing can happen to it. And so right. If you bounce it to your hand, then it'll be safe and sound for the next time you want to play it. And if you can then immediately bounce it to your hand on the same turn after that, then it'll continue to just be completely safe. On top of that, it has 3 power, which is significantly less cards can deal with removing a creature with a power of 3 than compared to a creature with power of 2 or 1.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, very strong card.
Tricksters, in my experience, because this isn't one I've played with a ton, but every time I have, they did stand out. They have the best non-targeted removal or disruption. Mm-hmm. So this is the faction that can discard cards from opponents' hands, which, like, there's a minion that you play it, and it's, like, each opponent discards 2 cards or something. And that, combined with at least one minion that just says, like, other players can't play minions on this base of, like, power less than 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a action that you play on a base, and every turn you may play an extra minion on that base.
Mm.
So the tricksters are sort of like wizards in that they have good ways of breaking that tempo, or like swinging tempo in your favor. They're not as fast or as bursty, but their disruption is there, whereas like wizards don't have a ton of disruption.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. Robots don't. And I put both of these at the second tier because they both have similarly like ability to synergize with a lot of other things, but they do have decent disruption that also goes with, you know, like just playing good cards.
Yeah, it sounds like they also have some tempo strengths to them, much like wizards and robots. But they slot in well with these tempo strategies because tempo is not only about getting ahead with extra turns, but it's also about setting your opponents behind. And that's, you know, they're pretty much the only faction that can do that through making your opponent discard multiple cards.
Right.
So yeah, while the rich get richer with wizards and robots, the tricksters will then make your opponents get set back further.
Yeah.
I was also thinking about putting, but I guess, let's see, you said tricksters and what was the aliens, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd say I agree with that. Definitely next, aliens are going to be up there, and I trust your judgment on the tricksters. Next tier is
zombies and pirates.
Yes, these are the ones that I had.
These are both very specific in that, like, they don't synergize with everything, but they have good synergies in the game.
These two have the best value, in my opinion. They can't match. They have some tempo. Zombies at least have some tempo, the ability to play multiple cards on a turn. They can't match wizards and robots' level of doing so, but they can. They have some. And then pirates have the best value in the game by far. Most of their cards are worth 2 cards or more.
Right. Yeah. So zombies are very typical zombie strategy. They can come back from your discard pile. Mm-hmm. There is one that you can play from your discard an extra action.
We should mention that when you score a base, all the minions you had on that base go to your discard pile. That should be mentioned.
And these are the two main factions that change that rule or ignore it in some way.
Yeah, they interact with it.
Zombies. They have zombies you can play from your discard either as a minion or as an extra minion. Mm-hmm. And they have a zombie lord that returns minions to bases you don't have minions on.
Yeah, so they return from the discard pile, and they also spread out in that regard, where as opposed to other enemy or other factions, which tend to clump up on different stacks. These are very good for scoring bases that people are ignoring, or at least being present on nearly every base. In a multiplayer game, I can imagine zombies are much more powerful than in the two-player game we played, just because there's often going to be more bases. Zombies mechanic works around by playing minions on bases that you don't have minions on currently.
Yeah.
So in a multiplayer game, there's more bases, and so zombies are probably going to get more value out of that.
Exactly. And then pirates.
Pirates' mechanic revolves around doing stuff with your minions after they have scored a base. Their most common minion in the deck is a deckhand that, when you score the base that he's on, you get to instead move that minion to another base. So they're good at scoring a base and then moving to another base and having advantage. You can see how this is kind of a tempo play, because it's like you're playing minions for free, but it's more of a value play in that your minions in that regard are worth two minions now, because you've played them there, and then they're going to continue to be valuable on other bases.
Right. And I think the good thing about that minion especially is that if it almost makes your opponent have the removal, or mm-hmm. else you can, you know, you have 4, 6, 8 power on mm-hmm. any base you want.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it has 2 power, so it's susceptible to almost every removal card right. in the game.
Pirates do have more than average amounts of removal as well.
Yes.
And they have cards that are actions that can just move minions between bases at different points.
Mm-hmm. I think what's most important is that they have 2 cards that remove multiple minions. Whereas most factions only have like 1 card that removes multiple minions. And for the most part, most factions will return it to your hand, or it'll be very specific on how it works. Pirates are a little specific too, in that they usually only remove minions with powers 2 or less, but they have one action that can just destroy 2 minions with power 2 or less for 1 card, which is a 2-for-1 is good value. And then they have another action that will remove all minions from one base owned by one person with power 2 or less. So that can trade up with multiple minions. However many minions an opponent has with power 2 or less, that can affect them. Yeah. I did find an interesting strategy when I had pirates and zombies together, where I could use my own removal on my own minions, because for the most part, your minions were too powerful to be affected by the removal. But I could remove my own minions using these cards, and then using the zombie abilities, get them back over time. So yeah, I agree. Zombies and pirates have their slot now in like the tier 3.
Right. And then the last tier, which I think are the weakest, are the ninjas and dinosaurs.
And funny enough, I also agree that these are definitely probably the weakest decks, the weakest factions in the game. However, our first game, you played pirates and robots, and I played ninjas and dinosaurs, and I happened to win. But I think that was only because I got very lucky at right. the very end of the game.
Yeah, so ninjas are really situational on all of their interaction.
Now, they have the greatest density of single target removal and single target management. So they have a lot of actions and creatures that are minions that will remove one minion from your opponent's side, and they most oftentimes can deal with a minion of power 3 or less, which is better than the pirates. So they further reaching, and they have more access to those cards. But their primary package of minions, so like I guess when we're talking about these decks and their strategies, usually we're talking about the cards that appear most of the time in the deck, or right. the deck has most copies of. The minion that the ninjas have the most copies of is a creature with power 2 that states at the beginning of your turn, you can return it to your hand and then play 2 minions for that turn. So this is good. It's the same ability that the robots are very strong with, but it is extremely susceptible, because having only 2 power, it just takes a removal card, any removal card in your opponent's hand, to nullify that advantage.
Right, and it has to be at the start of your turn, so they get a turn to deal with it.
Yes, exactly. It has to be on the field and just out in the open, susceptible for an attack. And it only has two power, so you could also consider it like you have to spend your whole turn to play a two power minion, so that in the future you can hopefully play multiple, like a five power and a four power minion,
right,
and then score a base. But I mean, you know, honestly, if you think about it, playing the two power minion so that hoping it doesn't get removed, so that you can return it to your hand and play nine power of minions, you might as well have just played your five power minion on the turn before,
and then the next turn played your four power minion,
because it's less likely that they'll get removed. There's significantly less cards that can deal with a minion with five power or even four power. So, you know, you're not really actually getting any tempo. The only way you're actually getting tempo, I don't know, you're not really actually getting tempo.
Yeah.
It's better to just have played the minions straight up.
Yeah.
And not had been susceptible.
Yeah. And then dinosaurs?
Oh, by the way, I want to say real quick, the ninjas have the worst card in the game.
Oh, yeah.
It is a card that... So some actions, when you play them, they attach to a base. You mentioned that the tricksters have an action that lets them play extra minions on a base.
And I believe aliens and zombies have actions similar.
Mm-hmm. And then some, like the dinosaurs that we'll get to in a second, some... factions also have actions that might stick to a base just for a turn, and they might prevent your opponent from doing something for a turn on a base. But it's very rare that an action sticks to a base. Only a handful of factions have them, and only a handful of those actions will stick around until the base is scored. Oftentimes they'll only be around for one turn. So when the ninjas have a card that destroys an action played on a base and also lets you ignore the base's effects, and it has two copies. Two copies of that card take up slots in that deck. Just know that that's the worst card in the game, because it oftentimes does absolutely nothing. And oftentimes you also don't want to ignore the effect of a base, at least in the base game. They're always usually beneficial to the person winning. So I guess technically it's okay if you want your opponent to ignore the effects, but it only lasts for a turn itself. So I don't know. It's just bad.
Yeah.
it's just a bad card, and the ninjas have two of them. So they're always pretty much a dead draw. Anyways, and then there's the dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs are supposed to be like the most powerful individually.
They're supposed to have the strongest minions.
Yeah. But oftentimes they are just too slow to interact with the tempo swings of the stuff in all the higher tiers.
Right. So the way that they tried to illustrate this in their most common card is they have a raptor with two power. But if you have, they get more power for every other raptor that are played with them. But unfortunately you can only play one card per turn. So you can imagine this being like playing a two power minion on your turn, which is susceptible to removal, like always. Then the next turn playing a four power minion, because it itself will have three power, and then the other one will have plus one power, total of four. Meanwhile, someone like the robots can play a two power minion into a three power minion on one turn, which is five power, and then the next turn do it again, or play a one power minion into a two power minion. You know, either way, they're coming out way ahead. You know, just being able to play one minion per turn is not enough to make up for the fact that their minions can sometimes get bigger.
Yeah.
Now, the only reason I was able to beat your robots and your pirates with my ninjas and dinosaurs was because, like we said, the game went with the back and forth, like I score a base, you score a base, I get second, you get second. We were about even on points. Basically, we were within shooting distance of 15 points, and if you had scored a base and I'd gotten second, you would have won. If I had scored a base and you had gotten second, we would have tied. But I was luckily able to score a base in two turns because the base had a breakpoint of 18. I had a minion of power 4 on it. On your turn, you didn't play anything on it. I think you had one there, but I removed it on my turn. And then when it came back to me, I had just the only winning combination of cards, which was to play a 7-powered minion, which is the only one in the game, and it belongs to the dinosaur deck. and then play a card that the dinosaur deck has that allows you to reduce the breakpoint of a base by the power of one of the minions on the base. So I was able to reduce 18 by 7 down to 11, and then my 7 and 4 made 11, and I was able to score the base without you having any minions on it. If you had just one minion on it, it would have been a tie.
Yeah.
Or I think you actually would have been technically ahead in points beyond 15. I would have had exactly 15, and you would have had, like, 16, I think.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, that's a combination that only uses cards that there's only one copy of in the dinosaur deck. So it's unreliable. It's a strong combination. And the dinosaurs probably have some of the best ability to score one base out of nowhere. They have another card that lets you, it's an action that lets you add 4 power to one of your minions. So, you know, you can add up to 11 power to a base, 14 power in my example that I gave, sometimes. But that's just not enough. That's one base, and then your opponents are going to score 2 bases ahead of you and win.
Right. All right. So I don't have anything else to say strategy-wise.
So in general, it's good to have, if you're playing in a way that lets you choose your factions, choose either wizards or robots, one or the other. If you want to try both, you can try both. If the other one gets taken from you, then you at least have the option of going for aliens, which combo very well with either faction. And then zombies and pirates are your backups. Tricksters, right. Exactly.
I do think robots and zombies is pretty good, but... Mm-hmm.
I tried pirates and zombies, and it kind of worked, but... I mean, you had aliens, wizards, which was just too powerful, especially when you were able to choose that one base that lets you just, like, dump your whole hand.
Yeah.
That was insane. If it had got back to me, I would have been able to dump my whole hand, because there is a base that says if you play a minion on this base, then you can play another minion of power 2 or less. And technically, that's also playing a minion, so you can continue to play more and more minions. You could just basically play every minion with power 2 or less in your hand. Zombies and pirates have a lot of them.
But wizards and aliens. Aliens have a minion that is 2 power that lets you return a minion of power 3 or less to its owner's hand.
I mean, essentially, yeah. And then you have wizards with power 2 or less that let you draw 2 cards when you play them. So you are just able to draw way more cards off of the cards that you played on the base and eventually just score the base just on your own.
Yeah.
Okay. So how was the game designed? So obviously... this is a lot like Millennium Blades, where they have all these factions, and the factions are designed with these effects that are synergistic with each other to an extent. So the game did kind of well at making these decks that certainly each have their own unique identity, that's also very flavorful for what they are, that also works together with the other strategies, so that any two combinations likely have some amount of synergies together.
Right. I think... The best way they did this was by having 2 types of cards, and instead of having card types matter, it was like when cards are played and where cards are played from matter.
Yeah, it's
so like aliens and to some extent ninjas and robots and wizards all have like enters the battlefield type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of making it that there's cards that refer to like a card type that you might not have, they refer to the same card types, it's just in different ways, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I believe every faction has at least one enter the battlefield effect on a minion.
I think every faction has multiple. I think,
yeah.
I mean, enter the battlefield effect is kind of the only effect a minion can have. It's more rare when the minion has some other kind of effect, like the zombie that can be played from your discard, or the pirate that shuffles around when you score a base. For the most part, like a lot of the other pirates had abilities that happen when they interplay. A lot of the other zombies had abilities that happen when they interplay. Yeah, it's the most common type of effect. So any kind of strategy that involves getting value from that, like the aliens or like the zombies that can return them from your graveyard so you can play them again, definitely slot well.
Right. And also what I think makes a big difference with how they synergize is that each faction having at least one minion with like 4 copies in the deck it means that you're likely to get a minion that does something relevant to the faction. Mm-hmm. So it's not often that you feel like you're only playing half of your deck, or like you're only playing robots and you're not playing the pirates in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you're likely to draw, cause usually the most common minions are like the defining ones that best exemplify the strategy of the deck.
Mm-hmm. They also quite simply made cards that don't care about what faction something is from. So like in robots, their robots say, if this is the first minion you've played, you can play another minion. And it doesn't say, if this is the first robot you've played, you can play another robot. So
robots aren't a good example because they do have cards that care about other robots.
Well, they do have robots that care about other robots, but they also have a robot that turns your other cards into robots.
True, yeah.
So, I mean, they break the rule, but they also exemplify the rule in, you know, depending on what cards you're looking at, I guess.
Yeah.
And a lot of cards do that, like zombies have a card that says search your deck for any creature with power 2 or less with the same name, any copy of cards with the same name, power 2 or less, and put them in your discard pile. And I played them with pirates, and I decided to look for the first hand pirate that lets you shuffle it around to different bases after they're scored, and then return them all to play. It was this long strategy. Anyways, it wouldn't have been possible if that card said look for your zombies and put them in your discard pile. It just said look for any card, and it let me craft this unique strategy being combined with pirates. So the cards are well designed to work with one another. They ignore factions for the most part in order to slot together and make interesting strategies.
So I want to talk about a design sort of task or challenge that mm-hmm. is very important to me that I feel like this game accomplishes real well, which is how do you make a competitive card game that works as a standalone game that you can sell on, like, you know, board game store shelves
mm-hmm.
that, you know, fits in that purpose. So how do you make a competitive card game that also plays as, you know, a typical game night game?
Yeah.
And this does it with two main ways.
Okay.
The first is that there is only two decisions you make with deck building. Now, a lot of, you know, like, that's a big deal with, like, Netrunner, was that you get this huge base set, but you still have to go around and build decks beforehand.
Yeah, you might spend as much time, if not more, building your deck as you spend actually playing the game.
Right. And Smash Up doesn't even have like the same setup involved as even like Dominion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dominion, you do have to choose a couple Kingdom cards. Smash Up, it's only these two things.
Yeah,
and
the least number of decisions you could ever make in a game that wants to give you at least a little bit of agency in what kind of deck you play.
But even then, you feel like there's important decisions because of how the different decks synergize and play. There is still the feeling that you're experimenting when you combine two new combinations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's still the feeling that you're making a deck that's unique or plays interestingly,
mm-hmm.
even though it's just two decks shuffled together.
The first game we played, we chose random decks. You received robots and pirates. I received ninjas and dinosaurs. And then after seeing how they played and understanding the strategies involved in those decks and the ones that we hadn't played with, I had made a decision that I wanted to play with pirates and zombies the next turn, or the next game around. Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's what I played with, and I was able to kind of play with the different strategies involved there. And some of them actually panned out really well, and I did some interesting things in that game.
Right.
This
is also a big deal because a lot of competitive card games are built on like player psychographics and different types of decks people can play. And having this quick decision making means that players can iterate on what kind of decks they want to try really quickly
mm-hmm.
until they find the one that's right or the ones that are right. Also, the other way this game makes it accessible and, like, you know, able to be played as just a kitchen table game is that the main scoring of the game, the main objective, the bases, it scales upward really well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in Magic, for example, like, multiplayer Magic is a thing and has been for a while, but you're still attacking one person usually. I mean, you can attack multiple people, but there's fewer cards that impact everybody.
In Magic, if you're playing a multiplayer game, it's usually better even to just, like, take one person out of the game. The game plays better and is more winnable when there's less players in the game.
Right. With Smash Up, it is sort of a mix. It's that, like, when you have more players, there's more room for people to make points on bases, but it's also easier to get free points off of bases.
Right. It kind of goes both ways. Like, having more players in the game and having more bases, it goes high in that there's more players to add minions to bases, and so there's more minions to score those bases in the same timely manner as they would have been scored.
Right.
Otherwise, but there, it also goes wide in that there's, like you said, more room to play your minions. There's, you don't always have to be matching toe to toe what your opponent does on a base in order to maybe try and eke out the first place slot. It's easier to just spread your minions and be and get the second places and third places in other bases.
Right.
It's also easier to gain control of a base and then maintain control of the base because your opponents might be more spread out and they might not be able to dedicate so many resources to one of the four or five bases that are on the face up on the field.
Right.
So it goes both ways. It gives you a lot of room, but it keeps the same pace.
Yeah. I call this Nintendo scaling because if you think of like Smash Bros or Mario Kart, like, those games are designed so that it's really hectic when multiplayer, but if you want, like, a strategic game, it's there. Mm-hmm. Especially Smash Bros., you know, it's, you know, you can do free-for-all if you just want to hang out and have a crazy game with friends, but, you know, there's tournaments for 1v1 Smash Bros.
Mm-hmm.
And the Smash Up does a similar concept where, like, you know, when it's multiplayer, it is appropriately very varied. And a bunch of things are happening. But when it's 1v1, it's a lot more careful.
Sure. I want to go back really quick to the point right before this that you mentioned about iterating decks. Because another big part about competitive card games is the fact that you have to play them. Oftentimes you have to pick a deck and you have to play it multiple times over and over again to kind of understand strategies. At least in this game, because the strategies of each deck are quite pretty simple, and also coming to figure out what deck you want to play happens a lot quicker because there's a lot less deck building decisions you have to make, then you are given a lot more time in this game to iterate and nail down all the intricacies of your deck's interactions with other decks. And you're also able to... Often you're able to nail down the interactions that other decks can make. I mean, you've tried all the other decks, and each deck has very clear strengths and weaknesses against other factions. So, you know, you will have the time to iterate and try and figure out that pirates are very good against a deck with a lot of small minions because they have all those board wipes. And so you would know that intricacy about that interaction, and you might be able to act upon it in a later game. When you see someone pick robots, you're like, oh, I know, I need to get pirates because I'll have the advantage there.
Yeah. And I mean, that's another part where the theming actually helps a lot, because you mentioned how it's very easy to understand the base like strategy concept for a deck or a faction. And I think having these recognizable tropes or cliches as the factions helps a lot, like wizards cast spells, or zombies come back from the dead, or pirates jump ship to another ship, or aliens abduct things. Like, these are all very pop culture zeitgeist general concepts that the game uses to help bring you to that intentionality of like knowing how to play and knowing what your deck can do.
Yeah, it is nice in a more broader sense of game design that you kind of already know how to play each faction before you even learn the rules of the game. It makes it a very good gateway game in that regard.
Right.
I would like to mention the fact that the games are extremely quick. Like, 15 points comes up very quickly on you in a game, at least from my experience from the games that we've played so far. Given the strength of the wizards and the robots comes from the fact that they can get ahead very quickly. they don't have, and I mean, it felt like, yeah, you were able to draw a lot of cards and play a lot of minions in the games with the wizards and robots, but I was still able to beat you with the dinosaurs, ninjas, because the game was so quick and I was able to like slip in a sneaky little victory on a turn, like, because the game, if the game went any longer, you would have continued to outvalue me to the point where there was no chance of me catching up. Like, both of the games we played, even the game that you won with that crazy combo happened just on one turn, and up until that point the game still could have been a tie if it had happened where I scored and you came in second on a base. Like, it ties happen can happen a lot due to the speed of the game.
Right, yeah. And that's just like, I probably mentioned this in the competitive card game episode, that when you have a game that's sort of meant for that style of tournament play, then you usually want like 15 to 20 minute games.
Yeah.
I do want to say one more thing that helps players like get into it really quickly if they just want it as a game night game.
Mm-hmm.
There are only two resources technically, which are your first minion you play per turn and your first action you play per turn. These are really easy to track. Have you played a minion? Have you played an action? And the fact that it's not like you're gaining resources over time, or, you know, it's not too many plays per turn to where it can be hard to figure out, unless you're like wizards or robots. But it's very easy to keep track of how many things you can do, how many things you have done. And it lowers that like analysis paralysis that new players to competitive card games can get.
Yeah. Plus five cards is less than the average, I'd say,
right,
and that most card games will have you draw.
Right.
Most competitive card games.
And if you imagine that you're playing two cards every turn, because in multiplayer, your removal and your all that gets more useful and more relevant, then you usually end up with just five cards in hand.
Mm-hmm. There is one thing against the general balance of the game that I had to mention, and that is that there is very little value cards in the game, and there's a whole lot of tempo cards. So when we talk about tempo, I interpret tempo as getting ahead, taking extra turns, and setting your opponents back so that you are essentially playing a turn ahead of them or more. And then value is being able to play cards that trade for multiple cards, which can usually make up for a tempo disadvantage. It's kind of like a keep up card or a board wiper, something that helps you get back into the game and equalize the field. And there's very little of these value cards to offset all of the tempo advantages that a lot of the factions can get.
Right. I think tricksters and pirates are the main ones that have these.
Right. And tricksters, it's not targeted because they can only discard cards. So,
well, they do have stuff that can clear bases of minions.
Oh, okay. Well then, yeah. So yeah, tricksters and pirates, and even still, at least with the pirates, they only affect weak minions. So if your tempo was to get strong minions onto the field before your opponents could, then it hardly makes up for it. So all I'm saying design wise is that's less balance. And so the reason why wizards and robots are so good is because there's hardly anything that checks them. I think another reason why tempo is very strong and actually more combo is very strong is because there's very little interaction that can happen on your opponent's turn. So if you can end your turn in a safe position, like I mentioned how you can return that alien to your hand that gives you victory points and it's totally safe there, if you can do that, then you're like set and there's nothing your opponents can do about it.
Right, though,
for the most part. So
I would argue
and yeah, I think we're about to make the same point. I'd argue that's okay for this game.
Both of those are okay because it's not like, because it is have like this game night, you know, regular type of game to it.
Yeah. And
interaction on opponents' turns is something that is very traditionally complex for card games to have.
Exactly. Hidden information that you need to keep track of. In this game, there is hidden information in that your opponents have cards you can't see, and you sometimes need to keep track of them because they might have a removal card for a key minion you're about to play. but for the most part, you don't really have to keep that in mind. You can at least know that minions with three or higher power are a little more resilient.
Or
otherwise, you don't have to worry about somebody interrupting something important that you're doing.
Or like timing is a big deal.
Yes.
And like when you play a card and what that means is a big deal.
As far as we experience in the games we played, there were only two cards that came into play that did something during your opponent's turns. There was a, well, I guess from your hand, there was a minion in the Pirates deck that could move around when a base is scored on somebody else's turn. But that was face up, so that was not hidden information. The only hidden information was the Pirates had a card that let them move their minions to, it let them shuffle their minions around all the bases. So,
technically, ninjas have a minion.
I know, that's the other thing. Oh, I was going to mention the two cards are, there's the one in the Pirates that you can play from your hand to shuffle your minions around when a base is scored. So you can either dump your minions onto a base that somebody else is scoring to get second place or even sometimes rob them of first place. Or you can score a base with your minions, then move them off of that base so that you can keep them on the board. They don't get lost when that base is scored. And you only have to move so many minions that you still keep your first place position on that base. The ninjas have a card that just is a three power minion that you can play on a base as it is being scored. So you can kind of get like a surprise 3 points on a base.
Right.
But that's very little to keep track of. The Pirates is a lot, but there's only one copy of it, and it doesn't come up often.
Right. I did want to say also that in regards to there being more tempo plays than there are value plays, I think that's just because in a multiplayer game especially, you'd want it to be more fast-paced.
Yeah.
And not have as many ways to just make everybody stop playing.
Definitely value plays both slow the game down by resetting it to a neutral state. That's far from ending the game, and also it feels bad when somebody board wipes because all of your hard work is undone. And if you're not playing wizards or robots, you're just playing one of the other regular factions that rarely ever plays more than one minion per turn, then having all of your efforts reduced to nothing on a single turn, you know, all 5 or 6 turns you just spent doing this ruined, is it feels really bad. So I can totally understand why those two elements of strategy were reduced in this to nearly nothingness. That said, it just means that wizards and robots are extremely powerful and can usually go unchecked.
My recommendation, if you're playing the base set at least with multiple people, then randomize the factions.
Yeah.
If you've played enough, then do a snake draft where the first player picks one faction, next player picks one, third player picks one, fourth player picks two, third player picks one, second player picks one, first player picks one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a number of ways you can modify that draft. You could say, like, you could ban faction. You could technically just ban wizards and robots,
right?
And then play with all the other factions, or you could, you know, do a draft like I get wizards, you get robots. You could even even randomize the first faction pick and then give everyone the choice to pick their second faction, so that they have some control over the synergies that they might use.
Right. Though banning factions outright is a lot harder to do with just the base set.
Because there's only eight factions. Exactly.
But luckily, Smash Up does have a lot of expansions that add unique factions with cool themes and cool mechanics.
Mm-hmm. So I guess since we're getting into the other games you might want to try if you like Smash Up, what are some of the expansions that you have played with that you have enjoyed?
So I like the It's Your Fault, which is really funny because, for one thing, the themes are genius. It's sharks, like street sharks, superheroes, dragons, Greek gods, and hurricanes.
I thought it was tornadoes.
Tornadoes, like actual natural phenomena. And that one's just fun because they're silly, but they also have some pretty unique stuff. I also have... I have the horror themed one, the Monster Smash.
So there's like vampires and Frankensteins
and zombies and ants.
Okay.
Werewolves and ants.
Werewolves and ants.
Those that's interesting because they add like plus one power counters.
Oh yeah, right.
But if you want like a more combo heavy sort of gameplay, then that's not as cool as like the Your Fault one.
Although I do like the idea of being able to add counters to a minion, which kind of puts it out of range for a lot of removal.
Yeah.
That's an interesting mechanic to slot into the pre-existing mechanics.
Yeah.
But you're saying that the It's Your Fault expansion adds more unique mechanics.
And actually, the mechanic that if you really want like full-on Yu-Gi-Oh! Combo play, then the mechanic with probably the best fuel for that would be the science fiction double feature, which has time travelers and shapeshifters, which mm-hmm. do exactly what you would expect them to do.
they cause you to take extra turns, assuming.
Time travelers let you play cards multiple times.
Okay.
And shapeshifters copy cards.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Yeah, those definitely, I can see how those definitely will slot in really crazy ways to the base set.
Right. All right. But honestly, just find one with themes that you like.
Yeah.
Because that's part of the fun of this, is just seeing different cliched themes and how far they can go.
Yeah, this is a pretty goofy game. And, you know, you can take it as seriously as you want, but you're probably going to have the most fun when you're goofing around a little bit while you're playing. Because, I mean, like, I was taking it pretty seriously for parts of the games. And, like, just seeing you, Matthew, just dump a bunch of robots or play a bunch of spells, like I knew that it was kind of a silly game and there was still a chance that I could win just out of some really goofy interaction, but even still, like, just seeing how much card advantage you get, it filled me with dread. But I mean, that's only a feeling that you get when you're taking a game seriously and you understand what goes into eking out victories more consistently in a card game, stuff like card advantage and what have you. If you don't really care about that, these games can just be enjoyable.
Yeah,
just creature and spell slinging games. All right. Is there any other similar games that you might recommend that are like Smash Up?
It's hard to find similar, like, light card game.
Maybe we could just say Netrunner. Dominion?
I think Dominion is one of the best examples of a game that is a card game that is competitive 1v1 and fun and hectic multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a bit of a steeper learning curve, but it's still fun.
And then I would, I guess, recommend Netrunner if you want to kind of advance your understanding of the genre of, like, a light competitive card game or a contained competitive card game.
I would say Epic Card Game.
Epic Card Game?
Which is designed so that you can do constructed or cube draft.
Yeah, that's also a good game, yes. So if you want to kind of take this further into a more competitive strategic level, Epic Card Game and then Netrunner are some good places to go after you've played Smash Up.
Yeah.
All right. And that's the end of our Smash Up episode. Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
If you would like to, you can. We would definitely like to hear your thoughts on how the recording sounds. And you can leave those comments on our social media at BG Bros Cast. At BG Bros Cast on Facebook and Twitter. Or you can leave a comment on any podcasting platform. You can also go to our website to find more episodes. We did an episode on Dominion, so if you want to hear about that, you can check it out. We have all of our episodes tagged and organized, so you can just search for whatever game you want to look at or listen to our thoughts on and find the episode where we talk about it pretty easily on our website. And if you're interested in going to URLs that we give you at the end of these episodes, then you can check out entertainthegeeky.com. I'll get it eventually. And entertainthegeeky.com is where you can find podcasts that our friends Chris, Roger, and Jason host, where they talk about all things geeky and nerdy, news and otherwise. And you can also go to their merch store and get t-shirts. That's entertainthegeeky.com/gear. And finally, we are very excited for the upcoming Kickstarter for our very own card game. Tell them about it, Matthew.
Yeah, this is a Kickstarter for Conniving Cooks, a bluffing and deduction card game for 2 to 6 players, in which players play as chefs in a fancy restaurant, trying to get food to the guests on time and get each other fired. And personally, I think this is another great game that can be both strategic and hectic.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the deck building aspect to it. Everybody has the same deck, but yeah, there's, you can get as strategic as you want with it. And I mean, I've seen some people play it to a point where like it's almost unbeatable if nobody else is taking it as seriously as they are. But that said, taking it a little goofy, you can have some really fun experiences with this game.
Yeah. And obviously, like we said, that should be launching October 1st. You can keep your eyes and ears on our Twitter and Facebook and this podcast for updates as we go.
Mm-hmm. What was that date again?
October 1st.
October 1st. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for that information. And thank you very much once again for listening to this episode.